Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today it's time to have a conversation with our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mudin. Each week we endeavor to answer your questions about medicine and nutrition. And we invite you to pose your questions by emailing us to radioprogram@AOL.com. One word, radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll do the best we can to answer your questions. For those of you who are new to Intelligent Medicine, Layla Mudin's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is a registered dietitian, and she's also earned a master's degree in the specialization of nutrition. So without further ado, here's Layla. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. And I'm particularly gratified today because I want to share with listeners a very nice Facebook post from one of my Facebook friends. She's one of these people who constantly comments and likes on Facebook, so I've gotten to know her via Facebook. She's an aficionado of Intelligent Medicine, and it's very gratifying because it really suggests to me how we are changing people's lives and having a big influence through our broadcast. You know, sometimes we sit here, and you know, it's not that gratifying because it's kind of a solitary endeavor. We sit here, I sit behind a microphone, you're on the telephone, and we're broadcasting, as it were, into the ether. And it's nice to know that there's a lot of people out there who really value what they hear. And we get many comments like that, but this one really is a very nice one. It's, Dear Dr. Hoffman, this note comes on the night of my graduation from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and certifies me as an integrative health coach.
Wow.
That's very nice. But she continues. This is from MJ. I am writing to you because back in the 90s, I started listening to you on the radio. My family was subjected, my kids, my friends. You took my interest in health to another level and made it my passion. I still listen to you faithfully, refer people to your practice and podcasts, etc. You're one of my main portals into the world of health, and I thank you for all the years of wisdom, cutting-edge science, and your dedication to sport. You're blessed in all you do for so many. Just wanted to thank you. You are a true doctor. She puts it in quotation marks, my teacher. And there's a little bit of inside baseball on that because the word doctor, it comes from doctore, which is, I guess, Latin, which means teacher. So, you know, doctors are first and foremost.
Really?
By the appellation doctor, you are essentially someone who imparts knowledge and information. So that's kind of cool. I thought I'd share that.
How great is that? You were this long-distance mentor to MJ and an inspiration and a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
How wonderful.
It doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't. Really, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's even better than the red Maserati and the yacht and the the mansion, the beautiful.
I thought it was a blue Maserati.
Blue Maserati. No, it's not. It's actually a white Audi station wagon. But
there you go.
Yeah. So let's. What I wanted to talk about a little bit, before we get into, and I know we have a lot of questions, and we're going to try and answer as many of them as we can, but I just have to touch on this. You know, this weekend, President Obama was in the hospital. Did you know that?
I heard, yes.
Okay, so there's this little thing, it was barely mentioned, and what happened was he experienced some heartburn. And they said, well, he had a little time on his schedule on Saturday, so he checked into, Bethesda Hospital or whatever, Walter Reed Army Hospital, wherever the president goes. You know, he has Obamacare, So he gets to keep his doctor. Yes, he gets the very best medical care, and it's very inexpensive. It's like we've lowered the cost of his medical care dramatically. I don't think he's paying us a penny for anything.
Well, hopefully he doesn't have a high deductible.
Right. So anyway, so he went to the hospital, and so the first thing he did, he had chest pain. So I guess they ran some blood tests. Presumably they want to make sure he didn't have a heart problem. Maybe they already know that he doesn't have any heart problems because he probably gets routine stress tests. So they did a CAT scan, and on the CAT scan they said, they saw a little swelling in his esophagus, and so the next procedure was a little look-see. They stuck the tube down there, the upper endoscopy, and presumably that actually has a couple of implications. First of all, that's the very self-same procedure that Joan Rivers had, so it's not entirely innocuous, although it's like a one
she
in a million
that
shot.
That particular procedure?
Yeah, they looked at her throat. I mean, in one way or another.
They just looked at her throat. Okay.
They did a laryngoscopy, they looked down her throat. An endoscopy, they looked down the esophagus. So anyway, I mean, it's not a no-risk procedure, but for a healthy younger individual like the president, it's quite routine, and for the vast majority of people, quite routine. The other implication of that is that for about 20 minutes, Joe Biden was officially president of the United States, because while you're having an endoscopy, you can't answer the red phone. You can't,
anesthesia, right?
Yeah, you're yeah. You're under, right?
You can't
handle the code on the nuclear football, to launch a retaliatory missile strike against, whatever foe might launch, if they got intelligence that the president is incapacitated. So Joe Biden was officially president for about 20 minutes on Saturday. And I don't think anybody's pointing that out. That's a little scary. That's scary. But anyway, so what they found was he had a little bit of inflammation of his esophagus. And so, perhaps we can offer some advice to the president, which of course he won't take, but nonetheless, we'll put it out there because this is such a common condition. Well, first of all, I think it's really a perfect storm for him because number one, he's under a lot of stress. I mean, there's no question. It's stressful. He's got Putin, and he's got all the stuff going on in Washington, and the immigration controversy in Ferguson, and he's got all these things on his plate. Mm-hmm. So no question, it's stressful. Number two, he is a former smoker. And some suspect.
Do we know for a fact that he is a former smoker?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, one can speculate there may be some special Secret Service detail that's sworn to secrecy that, allows him to go out, maybe they put up a screen, while he goes out on the West porch of
the
White House.
Does the Oval Office have a little balcony there where
right.
he can go?
Okay. And after a particularly stressful conversation with, Putin or Netanyahu or, whoever, he's engaging with, he goes out and he puffs on a cigarette. Who knows? Maybe he does. But the one thing for sure, guaranteed, is that he's chewing Nicorette gum. And actually, it created kind of a stir at a recent summit, because it was thought to be disrespectful. Here the president was chomping on this gum, and it was all these dignitaries, heads of state from all over the world, and it was thought to be, here he is like chewing gum like a, like a school kid. But, I get it. He's pretty hooked on nicotine, and he's doing the best he can not to, it's not going to light up a cigarette. I mean, when it was, Stalin meeting Churchill and Roosevelt, they all lit up. They all were sitting there. Churchill had his cigar. FDR had his cigarette in that long, flourishing cigarette holder, and Stalin, had his gold cigarette case, with those Russian made cigarettes, or whatever. It was not a shame in those days, but now, of course, when you need a nicotine fix, you chew the gum. And one thing for sure, that gum. If you read the side effects of the gum, GERD or reflux or heartburn is clearly one of the side effects from
really?
The gum. Yeah.
Okay.
So, in general, any minty gums, mint gums, as you know, mint relaxes the esophageal sphincter and cause the food to reflux.
Yeah.
So, gum chewing, with or without the nicotine, could be a risk factor if you have a peppermint gum, spearmint gum, or something like that.
Yeah.
So the other thing is he does tend to go for the fast food. Maybe he's just trying to show he's like a regular guy, but whenever you get a photo op, and he goes to like a diner and he orders like a burger, or he goes maybe
Five Guys.
He's a Five Guys.
I saw an article, it was a long time ago, but he took his staff to Five Guys for lunch. I'm like, oh,
that's
okay.
His that's his preferred food. I mean, it must drive Michelle crazy, you know, when he does that. But you know, she's trying to reform the eating habits of Americans, and he's just trying to show that he's like a regular guy, and he wants to have he wants to have like a day out of the the limelight and hang out at his favorite eatery. Yeah. But anyway, so the combination of these factors. But by the way, one risk factor he doesn't have, he's not obese. So, but it all goes to show you that you can have GERD and be as skinny as a rail like he is.
Right, right. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, so what advice can we offer him? What would we do? Because you do a especially good job in counseling patients who have GERD.
First of all, if he could slow down on the nicotine gum, that might be helpful. Yep. But most definitely, I would start him on Endofen.
Yes. Tell us what that is.
2 tablespoons in water twice a day. Endofen with demulcents, emollients. It's even got EGCG and arabinogalactins and
a little bit of cinnamon with a cooling effect. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful for GERD, especially intractable GERD.
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty much how we found out about it, was through a patient who had horrible, horrible GERD and Endofen saved her life. I said, what's that product called?
Yeah.
And then DGL.
The licorice lozenges, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very safe bet.
And you put patients on a GERD diet, and I know it's a detailed consultation that you have. You have 45 minutes or more with a patient, but what are some of the broad outlines of a GERD diet that you would recommend
besides carminatives like mint? There's chocolate. Mm-hmm. There's tea and coffee. It's not the caffeine in the tea and coffee. It's the
acidity.
Acid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tomato products. Certain fruits like bananas, apples. Strawberries, believe it or not, may be problematic. But these fruits are good for me. They're full of antioxidants. Mm-hmm. Yes, but if you have GERD, you're going to eat other fruits instead.
Right.
Or, certain raw vegetables, onion, broccoli, things of that nature can be problematic. Cucumbers.
So we put patients on elimination. Mm-hmm. So what about patients who are consuming, alcohol, certainly, that could be an issue.
Alcohol
right?
certainly will be an issue, And a gluten-free diet is also indicated.
Right.
So unless he could switch to gluten-free buns at Five Guys or wherever else he's eating, that's often helpful. And this is what I found most interesting in all the years I've been here, even those who come back negative for any gluten sensitivity whatsoever, they still benefit with a gluten-free diet. Their GERD simply disappears.
And could it be that grains and starches in general are fermentive, and fermentation creates bubbles, and bubbles rise, and with the rise of the bubbles comes an acid splash and maybe some partially digested food contents that splash against the esophagus?
Yes, yes. And you know what? The best anecdote of that is anybody who's been on a low-carb diet for a period of time, and then one day they cheat with some bread, the GERD comes back with a vengeance.
Yeah,
and I
think
that's exactly what you described as happening there.
And conventional medicine has even given this a name. It's referred to as SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the very self-same acid blockers that are used to treat GERD create a tendency for bacteria to proliferate in the small intestine.
Yeah.
They don't belong in the small intestine. They belong only in the large intestine, but they can actually travel upstream into the small intestine.
Well, those acid blockers are lowering making the pH greater, making it less acid and therefore more alkaline, and that sets up the environment for SIBO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Well, because the acid is actually somewhat suppressive of certain fermented bacteria.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the yeast connection. There are actually some patients who have formerly, we can diagnose them as having yeast overgrowth. And, yeast causes that, bubble, toil and trouble. The line from Macbeth with the witch's brew, where you get a fermentive mix. Yeast is used to make every type of fermented carbonated beverage out of the sun, champagne, beer, etc., sparkling wine. Mm-hmm. It releases carbon dioxide, and that is a gas that can cause belching and reflux.
Yeah.
So lower carb diet.
Often ex-smokers will then turn to sugar because tobacco is kind of a proxy.
Yeah.
For sugar, too, to some degree, in many individuals anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's chomping on, butterscotch candies or lemon drops or whatever else, that's also adding to the candida issue.
Well, they got a new chef at the White House. The old guy, is checking out. He's going to run some fancy food operation in New York. So maybe they can get a person to come in and do the GERD diet for the president.
The GERD diet.
Well, whatever. He's the commander in chief, so we wish him well.
They probably have him on a PPI, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, 100%. I mean, this is not, I don't think it's been formally released, the information of, what medication is the president on, but almost guaranteed they're going to put him on an acid blocker, which can create other problems. I mean,
It can cause SIBO, too. I mean, it's
very hard to get off once you're on. It's hard to wean patients off. So, I mean, that's not satisfactory. I think, maybe he doesn't have the luxury of undertaking a holistic approach because, he's in the fast lane and, it's not exactly easy to undertake a lifestyle modification while you're president of the United States. But,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's, anyway, so anybody listening from, if you're listening from the, State Department, the White House, anybody, I'd be happy to go down and consult with the press and putting any kind of political considerations aside.
You can send Air Force One to pick us up.
Please, right. And send the bulletproof limousine, and I'll be happy to do a bedside consult. Okay, so I'm just offering. I'm just like in a public-spirited manner. Both of us are offering.
Yeah.
In fact.
Yeah.
Okay. There's some cool museums in Washington, and good things
to
do.
Check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So let's hit it with some questions.
Okay, we've got a really interesting one from Denise in Australia.
All right.
Denise in Australia has severe osteoporosis, probably due to hereditary and primary hyperparathyroidism.
Okay, so time out. Let's talk about that. So what's hereditary and primary hyperthyroidism? Well, it's hyperthyroid, not hyperparathyroid, right?
Yeah.
I heard you correct.
She said it's either due to hereditary issues or primary hyperparathyroidism.
Hyperparathyroid. Okay, so hyperparathyroidism. Yes. Both hyperthyroidism and hyperparathyroidism can cause bone loss. But in this case, it's hyperparathyroid. Okay, so what do the parathyroids do? The parathyroids actually help to mobilize calcium and keep your calcium levels high. And when they're overactive, they will cause your calcium levels to skyrocket, and your blood calcium levels will get very high. Where does that calcium come from? Well, it comes to some extent from your food, but mostly it gets drawn from your bone bank account, where your body has, 98% of your calcium is locked in your bones, and very little is in your bloodstream. But parathyroid hormone causes your bones to release calcium. Which is great, usually, because you maintain homeostasis. Even if you're not, if you eat no calcium, you'll still have okay levels of blood calcium for a long time, but you will be withdrawing your bone bank account. All right, so when you have hyperparathyroidism, it's out of control production of parathyroid hormone. You get excess levels of calcium in your blood, and you can get kidney stones, you can get osteoporosis, and you can even get mental and mood changes. You can get pancreatitis. Nasty stuff happens with that.
Yeah.
So
now,
what could be done?
I have to, Denise says that she has normal calcium levels, excellent vitamin D, but there's the possibility of an elusive parathyroid tumor. And her question is this.
Yeah, tumors are benign. They're not cancerous tumors, but they're, enlargement of one of the parathyroids. There are four. And usually this can be tested for. You can isolate the one that's faulty and remove it. That's the way that you treat it, with surgery.
Yeah. She wanted to know if taking 3 milligrams of boron a day can stop or minimize this parathyroid tumor from continuing to leach calcium.
There's not a lot you can do unless you eliminate the cause, which is to reduce the parathyroid hormone secretion by getting rid of the gland which is causing the problem. And usually it's one or two of four, so you've got a couple left, and you're not completely without parathyroid hormones. So the surgery is very specialized. The testing is, attempts to isolate which of the parathyroid glands is going awry. And then they go in there and go through your neck and they take out the tumor. So there is no nutritional way to deal with what's called primary hyperparathyroidism. Secondary hyperparathyroidism is sometimes due to low vitamin D, and low vitamin yes. and vitamin D replacement will actually reduce the overwork that the parathyroid is doing because there's not enough vitamin D. It's the parathyroid compensates for lack of vitamin D by going into overdrive. Mm-hmm. And that's the that's secondary hyperparathyroidism, and that will respond to vitamin D.
Yeah. Is it so that secondary hyperparathyroidism is more common than primary, or do we just see more of it? It seems.
I don't know. I actually don't know the statistics on that. We've seen several cases. Now, it's really a judgment call if you have hyperparathyroidism whether you should take vitamin D. And I recently kind of had a little, I had a little back and forth controversy. Yeah, it wasn't a fight. It was, you know, it was a little controversy with an endocrinologist about giving vitamin D to a patient who had hyperparathyroidism. And the endocrinologist was utterly opposed to giving vitamin D. I, however, felt that this was a case where it was secondary hyperparathyroidism. And it turns out it worked out well for the patient because giving that patient vitamin D helped to normalize their calcium levels. And so, however, if someone has primary hyperparathyroidism, you really don't want to give a lot of vitamin D because vitamin D can enhance the absorption of calcium, which is ordinarily good, but in this case, not so good. So you give a little bit, but you don't give a ton.
Right, right.
I would maybe keep it under 1,000, you know.
Yeah.
You
know. Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to make patients deficient. When a patient's deficient, then they can have like double trouble because it'll upregulate their parathyroid.
Okay. Well, best of luck to Denise. She may have to have that surgery after all if there is
a difference. Yeah. Well, you know, look, I mean, this is a condition where unless there's a consequence, you could sort of watch and wait, but one of the consequences for her is fairly serious. She has osteoporosis.
Severe.
So, yeah, if it's severe, you know, maybe she's got to
She says the bones are deteriorating with each DEXA scan.
Well, there you go. Boy. Okay, so, I look for that condition, by the way, and when I have that condition, I say, okay, no, forget about strontium, Ostera, you know, vitamin K, that's not going to help. You really have to get to the bottom of the problem, because otherwise it's like, you know, putting water into a leaky bucket. You know, you're going to, you have to fix the hole before you can start replenishing the bone. All right. So let's, this is a good logical point at which we can pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. We only answered one question in part one, but we had a long digression about the president. and he's important. You know, he deserves his time, like any other person who emails us to radioprogram@AOL.com. I know he didn't take the time, but he's busy. And we can, when we return, we'll discuss more questions in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.